All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And if you've ever wondered how an Air Force member turned himself into a boutique hotel and short-term rental expert, my guest today, Blake Daly, who's not only mastered the dance, but also excels in raising capital for these multi-million dollar deals. Join me today as we uncover the secrets behind his unique journey. Blake, welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Bryce, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm excited to dig in today, talk about boutique hotels and short-term rentals a little bit and see how we can help some people.
Yeah, it's definitely an emerging topic, but certainly you didn't start there. What's the origin story? Where did you get your first cut in real estate?
Yeah, so definitely didn't start with hotels. That'd be a pretty audacious place to just start and jump into real estate investing, but started with residential short-term rentals, buying, renovating houses, turning them into Airbnbs. So the whole Airbnb strategy, and built a little portfolio of that. And then, you know, found my first little 8-unit rundown motel that needed a lot of love. And that kind of snowballed into buying 5 hotels in about 13 months. And now the biggest one yet under contract and about to close actually next week. So super excited about that one.
Yeah, that's interesting, because like people do definitely entertain the Airbnb space, and maybe they're renting out a basement suite and they get a little taste of them, you know, this short term rental business. But then there's the transition where it's like, I want to be a kind of a hotel manager, right? That's the, like, you end up running a bunch of hotels and you might have single families all across town. And then they say, well, why can't I put like 8 of them in one spot? So what was your kind of journey or your mindset when you decided, okay, enough of this like one-offs, I want to like start condensing my units? And what were some challenges when you made that shift?
Yeah, so really good question. I think like when you're, you know, approaching that transition or what to do next, right? You really kind of got to be bitten by the hospitality bug, because you get into bigger properties, definitely into hotels, it's much more of a hospitality business than an Airbnb side hustle. So that's like a gap I see with a lot of people that I, you know, talk to or whatever, is really translating your skill set of real estate investing, of, you know, servicing your guests that are staying in your short-term rentals, and really like tenfolding that into, all right, now we're going to do hotels, big focus on our guests, you know, all the things that go into the guest experience of choosing a place to stay versus, you know, now you are competing against hotels in a way and short-term rentals. But you kind of operate in this cool hybrid space where you get a guest demographic for both. So for me, it was, you know, making that transition. Like, I had that hospitality bug. One, I just loved the extra cash flow coming from the Airbnb side versus the long-term rentals that I had. So I started out in the Panama City Beach market in Florida. So great short-term rental market, definitely more so at that time than now with all the listing supply growth that they've had. But I was seeing a lot more cash flow, a lot more bang for my buck, a lot more rewarding for the time I was spending in that business. And I was just really intent on putting the right systems in place, because I still worked a full-time job, still in the Air Force, still had to go into the office, put on the uniform every day. And I really needed to approach that in a way that I could have the hospitality, but also the systems at the same time, which is you know, kind of a unique dance, or unique line to walk. So I had a transition where I had, I think, 11 rentals at the time, eight were short-term rentals. I surpassed my W-2 cash flow. And I was like, man, this was like my 5-year goal. I did it in 1 year. I need to go bigger. So then I got into commercial real estate and specifically multifamily apartments, syndicated an apartment complex. So, you know, learned how to properly raise money and do a syndication, right? And get all your investors in and have all those conversations. Mm-hmm. Learned, you know, the commercial side of investing as well. Now you're based on your values, the net operating income or the NOI, not the sales, comparable sales approach that you have in residential real estate. So learn the commercial side. And then when I found that first 8-unit, I was like, hey, I already have 8 units. So that didn't seem like as big of a jump to me. It's like, use the same systems, but now those 8 units are all in one location. So you get economies of scale, you know, have all your laundry on site, all your extra linens, all your extra amenities for the units, and really just added a lot of efficiency to that operation with 8 units in one location, and later more than having all those units spread out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a matter of like task managing. And do you find that your involvement with the Air Force and the training that you got there rolling into your systems and your like discipline when it comes to running your business?
Yeah, I definitely think it helped me put the systems in place. And then also as like, as you actually build a business, what you're doing is really putting processes and systems and people in place to run those systems and processes. So that's a big piece of it, is the people that now are doing the things and managing those tasks, and you're managing the people. So mm-hmm. in the military, like the common framework is like learn, do, and then like your hands off. So in the military, when you learn something, a new task, like somebody shows you how to do it, then you do it with them, and then they do it with you backing off and now managing it. Mm-hmm. So taking that same kind of approach into in the business world, that's probably a more common thing, but that's where I learned it was in the military. And then, you know, just the discipline that it goes into it with the time management, balancing all your tasks, and you know, really having to now be a leader of the business that you're running. And that's, I think, the transition from just having some Airbnbs where you're, you know, messaging a few guests, mm-hmm. you know, it's just you, you're the solopreneur, and now you've got to have people in place and, you know, systems that you're really on top of.
Yeah. Cause a lot of people get sucked into like being that person that is then, you know, if you've got one Airbnb, maybe you go and clean it. Maybe you are that everything person. And so
I've been there.
You know, you find that especially busy people with like intense W-2s or people who are really, you know, 40 plus hours, whatever it may be, they do find that limitation. And it's, the story gets told time and time again. I couldn't do it, so I had to hire someone to do it. And that's how it became a business. Because when you have the time, you get tempted into using your time instead of using people and hiring out systems. So yeah. With all the things that are going on now, where do you see your business kind of growing over the next, let's say, 12 months, 24 months?
Yeah, really good question. And just at first on that one part real quick is like, it's almost a trap. Like you get the financial freedom, right? Your cash flow surpasses your W-2 and you're like, oh, I can leave my job now. But I call that like the tier one level of financial freedom, where you really just replaced your job and you're working your own business and doing everything. So that's mm-hmm. something I had to get out of really quickly and get good at, like taking, you know, when you're an entrepreneur starting out, you're wearing all the hats in the beginning. So what my whole process was to get to where I am now, and kind of speaks to where I'm going forward, so it'll make more sense, but is like give one of those big responsibilities to someone else and maybe not perfect it, but get it to a good spot. And you just have to be okay with knowing that it might be done 70% as good as you did it, 80% mm-hmm. as good as you did it yourself. But now all that time is now freed up for you to do other things that drive more value in your business. And it's the biggest fallacy in the world that you can do it better, so you should do it. Mm-hmm. Like you should get in somebody's hands as soon as possible so you can elevate yourself to, you know, higher leverage tasks that provide more value for you and your business. Right. And then you just do that with each function of your business. Maybe it's, you know, the marketing, maybe it's the capital raising, maybe it's the renovation management, if you're doing like value add stuff, and just mm-hmm. each one of those things, you do that. So now what we're looking at in the next 12 months with this new big hotel purchase, and you know, one of the big reasons why I really like hotels is because you have the scalability built in. So I'm buying this hotel. It's going to be fully staffed. All the responsibilities will have a person owning them. And then I've kind of got to get back in that seat of, all right, now what do I have to get off of my plate to now go get the next hotel and build the OpCo, the operations company, or the management company that manages all my short-term rentals and all my hotels. Mm-hmm. How do I scale myself out of that to like a really efficient position in the business where I'm, you know, directing and managing and not, you know, caught up in the tasks? Because when you buy a new mm-hmm. place, right, you've got to be hands-on, you've got to, you know, help the team, train the new team, you know, to get the value out of that acquisition. If you don't, mm-hmm. you know, you're gonna miss a lot. So I kind of know that's coming over the next 2, 3, 4 months after the closing. And then again, just like start stepping back, getting things off my plate so that, you know, the next round we can, you maybe start a fund in 2024, raise a bunch of cash, and buy 2 or 3 of these things towards the second half of next year. So that's kind of what I'm working on right now.
Yeah, standard operating procedures, lots of manuals, lots of...
It's literally what I was talking about with my team today. Yes, the SOPs.
Well, and it's so it's so often missed. You know, we hire people and we give them this like kind of like gray, you're the property manager. And now I'm hiring property manager, but what's the actual sauce, like the secret sauce? And we'll touch on this in a minute. What's the secret sauce in the business that you're doing that makes it successful? And so Robert Kiyosaki calls that the unfair advantage. What is it that you feel comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
Yeah, for me personally,
Yeah, for you, yeah.
yeah, I think that's probably it right there is like one identifying the need of what's the most important thing that I need to hire or get off my plate now to like make the biggest impact. And then after like, all right, I've got this thing that I need to outsource for, that I need to hire for, who's the right person to fill that role? And then spend a lot of time, be really picky. You know, I went through multiple rounds of, you know, choosing a person too fast. They weren't the right fit. They didn't have the right skill set, the right background, or the experience. And when you do that, you know, you just end up costing yourself more time. So, I mean, that's kind of like a learned thing, but I think everybody kind of learns that probably at different speeds. So it's like identify the need, identify the person, and then be very, very clear with what that role for them entails. So we have a really detailed like mission and for each role that we hire, and very clear outcomes for what a good job in that role looks like. So that when they're hired, that's the first thing that they're given, so that they know like how they're being judged, and what a good job for them looks like. 'Cause a lot of times, and I've been guilty of this myself, is you'll make the hire, like you said, hey, I need a property manager. You're going to manage the property, right? But what does that entail? So it's like clear tasks, clear KPIs in your business that they own, so that they know how their, you know, performance is stacking up. And so that when you go to meet with them in 3 months or 6 months or a year, or whatever, ideally sooner, like, you know, 3 or 6 months, and, you know, talk about how they're doing in the role, you can pull up that same document and say, hey, your ownership in this role is to make sure that the properties that you managed had a 4.8 review or higher, that we were at this level of profitability, that we were at this level, you know, of guest service issues reported and taken care of in 24 hours. Like whatever those metrics are, you hit that, you hit that, you didn't hit this, and, you know, give the feedback that way so that they can continue to grow. 'Cause a lot of times, like, they just don't have clear expectations and don't know what they should be doing. So that's what I'm like really clear on, and I think has been a huge perk for building our business.
Yeah, right from contractors all the way up, you know, you can't hold someone accountable without expectations. You know, it's like, oh, I figured you'd know that, or it'd be obvious. Like, those aren't obvious. Never assume anything. You'll find out real quick. So
Yeah, like if I just created a new game and was saying, hey, your goal is to go win this game, but like, how do I score points? You know, how do I move the ball? Is it even played with the ball? Like, same is true with employees. Like, you have to give them really clear, not rules, but yeah,
explicit
expectations and
expectations.
guidelines. Yeah.
So this sounds like a capital intensive business. You know, you're buying multifamilies, and it does come with inherently a decent cash flow. What are you doing to fund these deals? You mentioned that you're looking to build a fund. How have you been funding these things so far?
Yeah, so definitely more capital intensive, especially like going from residential short-term rentals to, you know, boutique hotels. A lot more capital is required. So like I was saying, it's not a great first deal if you want to get into it, because a lot of those, like all my deals, we've had passive investors, and then partnerships in some form. So I think partnerships are a great way to expedite you towards whatever goal, as long as like there's alignment, right? And I think a good tip would be to like keep it deal based in the beginning. Like, don't, you know, get into a business marriage with that person. Like, hey, we're going to partner on this deal. Here's our expectations. Here's what we're each going to focus on for this deal. But you don't have to like integrate the whole business around that. Like, you go do other deals. And then if that works out well, like keep doing more and then let it develop into a partnership. But yeah, I think partnerships are great. Passive investors, like, always be, you know, networking with people. That's what I've done. I hosted a meetup, and when I lived in Panama City Beach, and that was really helpful for meeting new people, telling them what I was doing, showing them updates, getting people interested. And over time, a lot of those people converted into investors in my deals. People in my current deal met that way, and invested with me multiple times now. So yeah, the more you can make those connection, share what you're doing, give updates. I mean, there's so many easy ways you can do that now with email marketing and, you know, social media. All that stuff was around 4 or 5 years ago when I started, but now it's even easier with the automation of doing that, of creating personal connection in a systemized manner. But in the beginning, it's all about meeting people, right? Putting the right pieces in place to knock down these bigger deals.
So what have you found to be most effective in keeping connected with these either current or prospective investors when you're like building those relationships?
Yeah, good question. And I think the easy answer is email marketing. And I know that because this was a struggle of mine with the current raise of having all those people on my email list, but I didn't have them in a funnel. I didn't have them in an automation, and I wasn't keeping that investor list warm. Mm. So a lot of people over the last 3-4 years that I talked to, had personal connections with, you know, yes, I've got 50,000, or I've got 100,000 that I want to invest. Let me know when you get a deal. And, you know, then nothing, crickets, right? Mm. Don't talk to them. So I think an email list is really important. And at the very beginning, if you have to, like, put them in a spreadsheet and just copy and paste them into the email and BCC everybody, and then send your update. But there's so many easy things. MailChimp is free. There's ActiveCampaign, like so many different CRMs.
Yeah, free up to 500 people. Yeah, you can get
MailChimp. Yeah, I mean, you can just bootstrap it, save the cost, but do it, like send updates, even if it's something monthly of you just sharing a picture of the current deal that you're working on, or, you know, you're furnishing a new Airbnb and you take some pictures, tell people about that, tell people what you expect the returns to be and how much you expect the cash flow, like just keep them engaged with what you're doing. So that's what I'm building out right now, is a new CRM for the investor base. Because when I went to, you know, call up a lot of those people that I know and that know me, had, you know, their life situation changed, or they had put all their money in another investment. I just hadn't been staying, like hadn't been keeping them warm leads. So that was just an easy missed opportunity if I would have been heeding my own advice over the last, you know, 12, 18 months, whatever it might have
been. Yeah, money, use it or lose it. So with all this, people must be asking you, oh, hey, you know, Blake, can you help me learn how to do this? Can you show me the ropes? Is there a way that people can learn from you? Or I'm sure people are in your DMs going, you know, can you teach me? What does that look like these days?
Yeah. So actually this year, I mean, I'm working on my sixth boutique hotel deal now. When I first started, I had none of the access to the knowledge I have now, and there's nowhere to find it. And I was like, man, I would love to have talked to somebody in my shoes back then and had like some resources and things like that to get started. So earlier this year, I started my own boutique hotel mastermind to show people and teach people and guide them through how to find and fund and operate boutique hotel deals. And, you know, all the small things that go into it, from, you know, your renovation contracts to your operating systems, like everything that I use in my own business is available in the mastermind. So I think that's a huge, like, it's like the bumpers on in bowling, right? Like, you don't want to bowl a gutter ball and get into these deals. Like my first deal, I lost probably 80K with a bad contractor decision. And I was like, man, that would have been so easily avoidable if I would have had the right contract and knew what I know now going into that. And then other things with, you know, the revenue management and the marketing of just lost revenue early on in my portfolio of all the things that I had to learn by trial and error. It's like, man, this would have been so helpful. So that's why I started that earlier this year to help people with that and bridge the gap from, you know, investing in residential Airbnbs into the commercial side of boutique hotels, cabin communities, tiny home resorts, like the commercial side of Airbnb investing, which I think has a huge opportunity in the coming years. So.
Yeah. So with all that, you know, put together, typically when people are like investing with you, they need to know you. They need to ultimately, that's what builds to that trust position. What do you do in a daily way or a system way to kind of build that like, no trust relationship with the people now? Cause you said you're starting to nurture those relationships. What are some tips you can give to people who are starting the capital raising process, haven't raised millions of dollars, and really want to like build those categories up? What are you doing that you've found effective?
Yeah, that's so good. A lot of different things, but I think it all fits into like a big funnel. So if you think about getting new investors in, think of it like a funnel. If you think want to think about getting new deals in, think about that like a funnel. But the investor funnel, the top is like your awareness and your reach, how you engage and meet new investors. So top of the funnel, think meeting people, right? Social media, getting them aware of you, making posts that, you know, people who might be interested in passively investing would find interesting and find value out of. That's a huge one, like provide value to that intended audience. You know, go to networking events, go to conferences, go to capital raise conferences. There's a couple that I could think of off the top of my head. Like go out and put yourself out there so that you're building the top of the funnel to get these people interested in investing with you in the first place. Then kind of the middle of the funnel is what we talked about earlier, your email list, keeping the leads warm, sharing the updates. Like if the top of the funnel's know you, mm-hmm. middle of funnel is where they start to like you and really become aware of what you do, how you run your business, what kind of deals you get into. And then some people resonate with that. And then some people won't. They'll be turned off from it, but that's okay. Cause that's not the people that you wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's where you really start to cultivate your audience. And at the bottom of the funnel, that's the trust. That's where you set up these calls, you know, have an investor call, tell them what you do, share, you know, your investing philosophy, share about the current deal you have or the past deals that you've done, show them your metrics and your returns, you know, show them even a sample deal if you don't have a deal yet, right? So mm-hmm. they can trust in your process of how you underwrite, how you'd structure your deal and how your whole process would look like when they invest with you. And then that's where you make the conversion. That's where you can, you know, then now people know, like, and trust you. Then you've got enough rapport to build that ask. Hey, I've got an opportunity. Will you invest in this deal with me?
Yeah. A lot of people aren't really looking at it in a systemized way. They're just like, I'm just going to call the people I know and someone's going to give me the money. And it's like, yeah, maybe. And some amount, and that might be true, but you know, I prefer systems definitely to shooting from the hip. So if yeah. people want to connect with you, they want to learn more about the program and stuff like that, give us some links, give us some handles so that they can find you in the internets of things.
On the internets of things. Yeah, it's good. The best one would probably be Instagram. If you guys look at my profile there and, you know, you're interested in boutique hotels, short-term rental investing, put a ton of, you know, just free content out there with my idea of helping people just for free of like all the stuff that I wish I would have known, like the good to knows of mm-hmm. getting into the space. So you can get a hold of me there on Instagram, shoot me a DM or, you know, find out more about me on Instagram or blakedaly.com. That's my website too.
Oh, even easier. Perfect. Well, you know, I really appreciate it. And if you stuck around all the way to the end, which I hope you did, you got some real gems there. And I really appreciate you stopping by and giving us some knowledge here, Blake.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Yeah. And until next time, we'll catch you on the next episode.